A controversial helicopter training school closes its doors. Contaminated fuel may have brought down a British Airways 777. And the airline's passengers are already talking lawsuit. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Tuesday, February 5th, 2008. Confirming earlier reports to ANN from sources including instructors and students, Silver State Helicopters has now posted official notice on its website that it ceased operations on Sunday. The privately owned company says it has filed a petition for relief under Chapter 7 in the U.S. Bankruptcy Court and promises that information for former employees and students will be disseminated as it becomes available. Silver State had been making the wrong kind of news lately. A rising chorus of former students complained that they'd been oversold on placement prospects after training, only to discover few openings available for low-time helicopter pilots. It does not appear likely the company will recover. In its own press release, it speaks of its operations in the past tense. Quote, Silver State Helicopters operated flight academies at more than 30 locations in 15 states, unquote. Silver State, which Inc. magazine ranked 243rd on its 2007 list of the 500 fastest-growing companies in America, had claimed a six-year growth rate of 963.4%. In its statement on Monday, the company blamed its financial woes on a, quote, rapid, unprecedented downturn in the U.S. credit markets, which severely curtailed the availability of student loans for the company's flight academy students and resulted in a sharp and sudden downturn in new student enrollment, unquote. ANN received a copy of a memo said to have been issued by company founder Jerry Arola on Sunday, which added, quote, because the monthly operating expenses, even at the recently streamlined levels, continue to exceed cash flow, the board has elected to suspend all operations effective at 5 p.m. today. All offices are closed effective immediately, and all employees are terminated as of 5 p.m. today as well. All employees will receive a final payroll check via your normal payment method, check or direct deposit by ADP, unquote. A topic not addressed in the company's official statement was the effects of a growing accident rate and legal exposures. In a Jacksonville, Florida area crash that killed an instructor and a student last March, the National Transportation Safety Board said poorly coordinated maintenance practices by overworked and distracted maintenance personnel may have been a factor. A lawsuit filed on behalf of the flight instructor, Tamara Williams, alleges mechanics were negligent in reattaching the helicopter's control tubes to its washplate assembly, deliberately concealed or misrepresented the danger, and that the company subsequently falsified the maintenance log to indicate both proper completion of the repairs and a follow-up inspection. Check back with our website for details as the story unfolds at aero-news.net. Investigators on the case of the January 17th off-airport landing of a British Airways Boeing 777 on approach to London's Heathrow Airport reportedly suspect fuel system contamination may be a cause. As ANN reported, the plane landed short of runway 27 left after its two Rolls-Royce Trent 895 turbofans failed to spool up in time to arrest the airliner's descent. 13 of the 152 people on board were injured in the hard landing, but there were no fatalities. The Wall Street Journal reports FAA officials are increasingly pointing toward some sort of fuel contamination as the cause of the accident, specifically small-sized contamination building up in the engine fuel systems or ice in the fuel somehow limiting the fuel flow to the engines. The paper quotes a memo sent to high-level FAA regulators last week. The FAA says onboard sensors recorded a fuel temperature of minus 29 degrees Fahrenheit and internal damage to at least one fuel pump on the 777, suggesting the pumps weren't receiving adequate fuel flows. This is all according to an anonymous source close to the investigation. The memo also revealed the pilots received a maintenance message indicating excessive water in the center tank while taxiing for takeoff on two flights prior to the accident flight. In each case, the warnings disappeared before action was taken to address the problem. The 777's center tank would have fed both engines on descent and approach, according to experts cited by the journal. Both U.S. and British investigators say it's too soon to issue specific recommendations to address potential center tank icing. But, of course, it's not too soon to file a lawsuit over it. London's Daily Mail reports some passengers have already called their lawyers, claiming hearing problems and other trauma caused by that hard landing. Others complain they were held beside the fallen plane for up to 20 minutes, despite leaking fuel and fears it could explode. British tort law limits lawsuit awards for mental trauma to £85,000 per passenger. That's about $169,000 U.S. at current exchange rates. But BA's potential liability could jump sharply if the company is found to be at fault for the failure, which is no doubt raising beads of sweat on the brows of whatever flight crew members decided they were good to go after that maintenance message appeared, then disappeared. A woman who federal authorities accuse of selling sensitive military technology to Iran and China was apprehended in December at San Francisco International Airport. Citing court documents and an unnamed government official, ABC News reports Laura Wang Woodford was arrested December 23rd as she returned to the United States to visit her elderly mother for the holidays. Customs agents met her flight from Singapore and took Wang Woodford into custody. The woman runs a business called Monarch Aviation in Singapore. Agencies, including the FBI and Immigration and Customs Enforcement, say she has used the business as a front to sell millions of dollars worth of munitions over the past 16 years, some of it going to Iran by way of China. A letter filed by federal agencies with the New York District Court states, quote, "An examination of the defendant's luggage revealed two merchandise catalogs from the China National Precision Machinery Import and Export Corporation, a weapons of mass destruction proliferator. All United States persons and entities are strictly prohibited from engaging in business with CPMIEC," unquote. On Friday, Woodford pleaded not guilty to all charges and was ordered detained without bail by U.S. Magistrate Judge Victor Pohorelski. Authorities are still working to locate her husband and partner, Brian Woodford. Up next on ANN, Iran has launched a rocket from its new space center. Industry observers still say a Delta-Northwest merger is imminent. And the jockeying for landing slots is underway at Heathrow. You're listening to Aero News.
Do you think the only time your certified airplane can be equipped with a full emergency airframe parachute recovery system is when it rolls off the production line? Well, think again. BRS is the aftermarket leader in providing full airframe recovery parachutes for certified airplanes like yours. We manufacture the reliable parachute systems you need for a full range of aircraft, including Cessna. For your own safety and for that of your family members and loved ones, get the extra life assurance of a BRS airframe recovery parachute. In the event of an emergency, you'll never question the security of having one final option. Call BRS at 651-457-8651 or visit us online at brsparachutes.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for February 5th, 2008. On the web, you can find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Iran appears to be the latest country capable of sending its own rockets into orbit, much to the consternation of the Western world. On Monday, the belligerent Islamic State launched what it termed a research rocket from the country's new space center. State TV reported, quote, "The first Iranian rocket, Explorer 1, was fired into space. Iran has joined the world's top 11 countries that possess space technology to build satellites and launch rockets into space," unquote. The London Telegraph reports Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad read out the launch countdown for the rocket and even donned 3D glasses to see an aerial map during his visit to the space center. It's located in the remote desert of northern Iran, and according to reports from the semi-official Fars news agency, the new complex also includes an underground control bunker. The launch has obviously renewed fears that Iran will use its space program as a front for more hostile projects, including the development of nuclear-capable weapons. It's thought that Explorer 1 is an adaptation of Iran's Shahab 3 intercontinental ballistic missile, the same way the U.S. and Soviet space programs were born. But some analysts are skeptical of the latest Iranian claims, noting that a similar rocket launched a year ago reached only suborbital space. Ahmadinejad also unveiled Iran's first domestically produced satellite, christened OMID, or HOPE. The rocket launched on Monday is the same type intended to send that research satellite into orbit later this year, 3 years after the country's first commercial satellite, the Russian-made Sina, rode into orbit aboard a Russian rocket. Explorer 1. Catchy name. I wonder where they got it. You know, lately, our news day wouldn't be complete without an update on the rumored merger talks between Delta Airlines and Northwest. So here we go. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution cites several unnamed sources close to the talks in reporting that if a deal is going to happen, it had better be soon. Airline consultant Terry Tripler told the paper, quote, "I think this thing will be resolved one way or another by February 15th, unquote. Neither Delta nor Northwest has even confirmed that merger negotiations exist. There is a consensus within the industry, though, that both sides are rushing to iron out details. And there are two reasons for the rush. Fuel prices continue unabated, and the partners would want to submit the merger for Justice Department review before the Bush administration leaves office. Tripler predicts that if Delta Northwest does happen, it will trigger a wave of airline consolidation. Quote, if Delta and Northwest announce by February 15th, we'll hear another one by March 1st, unquote. The news lately has also been full of new transatlantic airline partnership announcements. And with the Open Skies Agreement between the U.S. and Europe set to start on March 30th, some of the moves are starting to make sense. In many cases, the new partnerships will result in flights serving U.S. markets coming to Heathrow, while some traditional service to cities in Europe gets bumped to less convenient airports such as Gatwick or London City Airport. The Financial Times reports British Airways will shift its Dallas and Houston services from Gatwick to Heathrow, where connections will be easier. But its flights to Detroit will be dropped, and its flights to Warsaw, Poland, will move to Gatwick. In turn, that discontinued service between London and Detroit will be picked up by Northwest starting May 1st. Northwest, which was not allowed to serve Heathrow under the old Bermuda 2 agreement, partnered recently with Air France KLM to gain access. Northwest, which carries lots of Boeing and Microsoft execs working with codeshare partner Alaska, will add service between Heathrow and Seattle on June 1st. But European businessmen accustomed to convenient Air France KLM flights to Heathrow from Eindhoven and Rotterdam will see those flights discontinued to be replaced with less convenient service to London City Airport. Delta and Air France have agreed to share revenues and expenses on some routes. The Times reports that starting March 30th, Delta will fly between New York and Heathrow twice daily and serve Atlanta once a day. In exchange, Air France picks up a daily flight to Los Angeles. But Air France will drop 5 of its 12 daily round trips to Paris, keeping only a few flights at peak departure times. The airline points out, though, that it operates service to Charles de Gaulle and Orly from London City Airport. One European carrier known for bold moves is playing it conservative on Open Skies. Virgin Atlantic is holding off on adding service between New York and European cities outside the UK, observing that the Open Skies agreement could face trouble when it comes time for Phase 2. The next step in those negotiations is expected to bring pressure for relaxation on foreign ownership in U.S. airlines, and that's something which so far has been a non-starter in the U.S. The anniversary passed quietly on Friday as media attention was fixed on the Super Bowl, but in Louisville, Kentucky, the 20th anniversary of UPS Airlines is a pretty big deal. Starting in 1988 with two DC-8s, which by the way remain in service, UPS is now the ninth largest airline in the world, with 268 aircraft and 3,000 pilots, and is still growing. Former UPS President Dick Omey, who retired to Vero Beach, Florida, recalled the seven-year effort to create the new carrier from scratch starting in 1981. Omey told the Louisville Courier-Journal he began his career with UPS as a package car washer and had climbed the ranks to become assistant region manager when he landed on a committee to investigate adding next-day air service to compete with FedEx. The team that oversaw that airline's launch included future CEO Mike Eskew, future chief operating officers and airline presidents Tom Wiedemeyer and John Baestenner, and Jack Blaisdell, who managed UPS's Hub 2000 Worldport project. After years of contracting with Evergreen Airlines, Orion Airways, Ryan International, Interstate Airlines, and IPX Air, UPS announced its intent to form its own airline August 24, 1987. Despite the immense task of organizing and staffing the operation from scratch, and the fact that Omey's airline experience was zero at the time, UPS Airlines was granted its certificate by the FAA just 5 months later, on January 25, 1988. The company says that's a record time for certification of a new U.S. airline. Bob Lakitas, UPS Vice President for Airline and International Operations, tells the paper the company remains happy with the city as the relationship enters its third decade. Quote, as a transplanted Louisvillian, it's been great to watch UPS and my adopted hometown grow together. We plan on continuing our success in Louisville and in the Air Express business for many years to come. Unquote. Still ahead, Canadian pilots say passenger profiling is a good thing. The state of Virginia has something way better than your poker run. And a new air show debuts in June in Maryland. You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 GTS. Go ahead, indulge yourself. The SR20 GTS provides entry-level luxury into the world of Cirrus, yet at a price that makes indulgence affordable. When friends, family, and business associates experience the versatility, freedom, and sheer fun of flying in your Cirrus, they'll see that it maximizes the most precious commodity of all, time. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design. One reason that they can say that is because of Clarity Aloft's flexible boom arm. This featherweight band is the same one sported by stage musicians and performers the world over. Balance and comfort are the result of its elegantly simple design. The mic boom is easily repositioned for eating and drinking during flight without disturbing your earpieces. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Tuesday, February 5th, 2008. I'm Paul Platt. Passenger profiling has some negative connotations in today's politically correct society, but a growing number of governments are becoming believers in the technique as a tool to make airline flights safer. Now, the Airline Pilots Association International, representing 2,100 Canadian pilots at six airlines, wants Canada to develop a profiling program of its own. The U.S. Transportation Security Administration conducts profiling not based on racial or ethnic factors, but rather on behavior. TSA claims that in 2006, the 600 agents in its Screening Passengers by Observation Techniques program, or SPOT, identified 70,000 travelers exhibiting suspicious behavior, and 700 of them were arrested after being pulled aside for more detailed questioning. TSA is so pleased it wants to double the number of trained agents in the program. The Calgary Herald reports that introducing SPOT to Canada would raise unique issues. Transport Canada is reported to be researching what it calls behavior pattern recognition and the legal implications for Canada. The Canadian Air Transport Security Authority currently has responsibility for screening of passengers and explosives detection at Canadian airports, but those agents lack the training to conduct micro-expression screening. Before plunging into another expensive government program to provide trained screeners, Canadian officials will want to be sure the result justifies the cost. Most advocates of behavioral profiling are careful to separate the concept from the idea of singling out passengers based on their race, religion, or ethnicity. In Israel, however, El Al Airlines is unapologetic about its policy of paying extra attention to Muslim travelers in its security program, and proudly points out that its last successful hijack attempt was 40 years ago. Virginia wants pilots to experience visits to all 66 public-use airports in the Commonwealth. So, it's launched the Virginia Aviation Ambassadors Program, rewarding pilots who see them all. The Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association says the program has three participation levels and is open to all pilots and passengers. Participants keep track of the airports they visit and events they attend by collecting stamps, which are then placed in a program passport. If you know the area, you're saying, hey, wait a minute, you can't land at the mall. Ronald Reagan Washington National Airport, just outside the nation's capital and just inside Virginia, is off limits to general aviation. But not so fast. You'll still get the credit if you drive there. AOPA member Tom Mahoney says he completed the program, and the trip provided him several adventures he might not have tried otherwise. He also earned a leather flying jacket. Whoa, that's way better than most poker runs. Air shows everywhere are threatened by population encroachment, rising costs, and insurance hassles. So it's nice to be able to report the birth of a new one. The red, white, and blue jets of the U.S. Jet Aerobatic Team and the black and gold parachutes of U.S. Army Golden Knights will headline the inaugural OC Air Show in Maryland, scheduled for June 10th and 11th over the Ocean City beachfront. The U.S. Jet Aerobatic Team is one of only two civilian aerobatic jet teams in the country, appearing at select air shows each year. They perform low-level close formation and opposing aerobatics, featuring formation loops, mirror image flight, and opposing knife-edge passes at closure rates in excess of 700 miles per hour. The U.S. Army Golden Knights Parachute Demonstration Team has performed at Ocean City before, but it's been a while. Sergeant First Class Harold Myers, the Gold Team leader, said, quote, "The members of the Gold Demonstration Team will be jumping into the OC Air Show this year. We're really looking forward to meeting everyone and convey our sincere appreciation to the American public for all of their continued support, unquote. Ed Hamill will also perform at the event in the U.S. Air Force Reserve biplane. Other schedule details are sketchy so far, but there will be an open house featuring U.S. Jet Team members at Ocean City Municipal Airport on June 9th, the day before the show's official opening. The show can be seen at no charge from most of the boardwalk, and premium seating and chalets are available at additional cost. You can get all the details at ocairshow.com. And finally, if a recession is indeed upon us, Austrian school economists believe it will be good for us. After all, government tinkering with the economy is like building a dam higher to control a flood. It works great until it breaks. A recession is kind of like a colon cleanser for the economy. Unpleasant for a while, but wonderfully refreshing afterward. Bubbles burst, speculators who gambled on something for nothing get what's coming to them in a very satisfying way, and the rest of us get great deals on stocks and houses for a while. That's all well and good for economists, but you don't usually hear airlines cheering for a recession. I guess that's just one more thing that makes Michael O'Leary different. Michael's the CEO of Irish ultra-low-cost carrier Ryanair. Quote, I don't know why we are trying to avert a recession. We need a recession. A recession will get rid of environmental taxes and a lot of the environmental nonsense that's talked about regarding aviation, unquote. Speaking in a TV interview, he admitted his airline's profits could drop as much as 50% in 2008 due to the downturn, but he still likes his company's odds in a recession. Quote, during recessions, travel does not get cut back, but people look for cheaper alternatives. If we get a recession, I don't see people cutting back on the amount of flying they do, unquote. Meanwhile, as United Airlines takes heat for being the first legacy U.S. carrier to start charging for checking more than one bag, Ryanair is way out in front on that one. The airline charges for all checked bags, and the price keeps rising. O'Leary said Ryanair will continue to raise fees for checked bags until customers choose to fly with carry-on luggage only. So, what will the company do with all that empty space in the bottom of its 737s? Well, I guess that depends on how much you want to save and just how badly you think you need a window. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, my guest is Paul Schaller, president and CEO of Quest Aircraft, which just celebrated the first customer deliveries of its Kodiak turboprop. What this company set out to do and the investors it attracted as a result make for an interesting story. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our Aerocasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.